sing it. Bring them in.
Bring them in, bring them in, bring them in from the worlds of sin. Bring them in, bring them in, bring the lonely ones to Jesus.
All right, bring them in. From the fields of sin. Whoa, man, I never heard the ABC called that before, but that's okay. You know, it's interesting. Sin is exactly what health ministry is about. It's the leading cause of death in America. Sin. It's not heart disease. It is sin. You know, I often ask people, I say, what is it that is the largest cause of death? And they'll say it's heart disease. It's really not. It's sin. Separates us from God, separates us from others. So in health problems, people get separated. And often when I start to introduce the spiritual to them, I'll talk about how they're separated from this, or the reason they came is because they thought they might be separated from their job, or separated from their family, or separated from their grandkids, or separated from success. And I said, what is it that separates us? And they say, all those diseases. And I say, yeah, that's what the Bible calls sin. Yeah. It's right there. Okay, let's come back. Now, once this scientific excellence is taken care of, we're part two now, which is how do you lead people from health to Him. The first section was having churches that are places of healing. How many can see how if you follow those essays, you're going to have a church that's a place of healing? And really the core of that is the spiritual connection of your members and yourself with the Lord as you're reaching out with scientifically excellent programs that are coupled with sacrificial service. You spend sufficient time with people. It's not just a box and then you go on vacation to Florida and leave everybody hanging. It's, you're with people. You're watching them. And significant interaction while you're reaching out to them and then continuing on with your alumni programs and everything else. And then you have that spiritual path that is established. The spirit versus the flesh, and then seeing how to make choices, the will, the thoughts, and then the feelings follow as a choo-choo train. Okay, so when these elements are there, when all of these elements are there, people will naturally begin to ask a question. This happened again and again in my programs. In other words, some people just came to talk to me at the break and they said, well, how do you bring the spiritual into it? How do you do this and how do you do that? Look, my contention is that scientific excellence is a spiritual thing. Sacrificial service is a spiritual thing. Sufficient time is a spiritual thing. Significant interaction is a spiritual thing. And so is this. And what's happening is the spiritual path is being established. And you don't have to say anything really yet. You just have to be. You don't just have to do. You have to be as you're doing. And as you're doing that, then the spiritual path is really established. And then I just love it when people begin to ask questions rather than me telegraphing it. How many of you like it? How many of you noticed the key word in the New Testament of conversion? It's usually the opposite sometimes of what we do. We usually go out and say, so now do you want to get baptized? But in the New Testament, the word was, what must I do? What hinders me? There's only one time, and it's the only text we quote usually, what hinders you from being baptized? There's only one time, and all the other times everybody else is saying, what must I do? My contention is that we have to be so effective in our ministry that people say, how can I join? What must I do? How do I get in the boat? We had this one guy who was coming through, and as he was just there for 2 weeks. This guy, he was the head mathematician in the state of Kansas. Very intelligent guy. Take every single math course. He was one of these other guys that was coming. He was like, really like the statistics, you know. And he's sitting there, and after just 2 weeks, he comes up to me. He says, I want to talk to you. I want to take you out to eat. So I said, all right, great. Let's go out to eat. He says, I want to see what you get at Red Lobster. So I go to Red Lobster, and I got a salad and a potato. He goes, oh, okay. So he says, the reason I really wanted you to come out is because I just want to ask you a question. I've been a fly on the wall here, but I want to be a bug on the paper. I said, what? He says, I've been on the bench. I want to get in the game. I said, what? And he had like 16 of these little, you know, cliches. But what he was saying was, how do I join your church? I was kind of dense. He was going, how do I join the church? I said, are you asking me to join the church? He said, yeah. I said, really? I was alarmed. I said, you know, but this was a health evangelism working. And I said, sure, you can join the church. Let's set up a study schedule. Because our joining the church is just like our CHIP program. We want to show you everything about it first. He goes, great. I want to see what you eat at all the restaurants in town. So let's meet on Tuesdays. And for the next Tuesday, for the next year, he took me to all, I went to every single restaurant. He would try and pick these, you know, what was it, red, white, and blue barbecue he took me to. He's going, what do you want? You know, I'm kind of looking around, seeing my members around. You know, I'm walking in there. He took me to some of the places I would never go because he wanted to see, how do you eat? And there was not a dry in the place when he got baptized. Powerful, right? So people begin to ask the question. They don't. Not all of them will say, how do I join your church or how do I join the team? But they will ask a question. And usually they ask this. What's the connection between this and your church? Why is your church so interested in health and no other churches are interested in this? Why doesn't my church talk about it? Usually Baptists ask me that. Southern Baptists will ask me that. They'll go, why doesn't my church... By the way, a study out of Purdue University says that Southern Baptists are the sickest people in terms of Christian denominations. And you know what? In the study, you know what it says in the study and reports of the study? Right in the study itself, it says because it's related to the theology of once saved, always saved. And also the idea that the soul is separate from the body. Can you see how the health message lays the foundation to talk about some doctrinal things? Interesting, yes? So, interesting. So they ask this question, what's the connection? So, in all my health things, I was there and this health ministry was going on and I realized that that was the question I had to help my people answer and it couldn't just be a one-liner. And someone says, why is the sky blue? And you don't say, because it is. I don't even know why the sky's blue, but you know what I'm saying. You can give a short answer, but it deserves something more. So what I say to people is, do you really want to know the answer to that? And they'll say, yeah. So, well, let me come over and try and answer it for you. And that then developed into a series of studies that put together a little book called What's the Connection? And it's just a series of studies that answer the question, what's the connection? Because if you do effective health ministry, what are they going to ask? What's the connection? So what do we do when they ask that question? This is when we introduce the source of authority. The source of authority so far in our health evangelism has been what? Scientific excellence. It's been all the science. But people can be led astray by science. There's all kinds of experts spurting. And they spurt baloney sometimes. How is it that Adventists know how to pick good scientists? There is a higher voice from above that leads this church. It's the Bible and the spirit of prophecy. Is it not? That is the source of authority. Look at this text. Look at it with new eyes. Luke 4:18-19. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has appointed me to what? Preach the gospel, not under the devil's spell, but God's spell to the poor. He has sent me to do what? To heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the what? Acceptably. Now, I want to suggest to you that this opening sermon of Christ blends two elements. What? Proclamation along with restoration. Restoration, there's education, there's adoration and proclamation. Can you see it in the text? Those are blended, but notice something. This is the key element. The authority of Jesus' ministry was based on what? Look what I'm doing in front of your eyes. I'm showing you the end result of my power because I heal someone miraculously right there. I can do that forever for you. Justification, sanctification, glorification, all there in one little miracle. A cameo of the kingdom, right? A gem, a picture. So, what kind of preaching, though? Preaching that was coupled with health evangelism, but something else. to preach, what's it say at the end? The acceptable year of the Lord. What is that? That's prophetic preaching. Look, if you're doing health evangelism and you don't have it connected with prophetic ministry, it's not going to go anywhere. Or it's not going to go where it needs to. If you're following Christ's model, how many of you are with me? Now, let me just sophisticate that a little bit. When we're trying to lead people from science to the higher sources of authority being the Bible and the spirit of prophecy, notice these statements now from some eminent scholars. Hindu, Chinese, Mayan, Egyptian, Babylonian, Greek cultures had in varying degrees starts in science that ended in stillbirths. Why? Belief in God's omnipotence changed the view of nature from imprecision to the realm of what? Precision. Why was it that these other religions didn't have science? Because they didn't have a God who was precise, who said He was going to do something, and then He did something. He said, this is what will happen, and then it did happen. Cause and effect. That is the basis of science. And where did we get that from? The prophetic aspects of the Bible. Yes or no? So, the Bible is the foundation of science. The Bible is the... How many of you are with me? The Bible is the foundation of true science. Let me put it that way. Because it shows valid cause and effect relations. And that's what prophet... You know, Isaac Newton wrote more about science than he did, or more about the book of Daniel than he did science. Why did he study the book of Daniel? He himself will say, is because I want to find out more about this precise God that I see in prophecy. And he laid the foundation for the scientific method. You've got to help people make that connection. Once they start asking, they say, what's the connection between this and your faith? I shared that with George, the engineer. He goes, wow. Never thought about it that way. The concept, Ariel Roth in his book, Creation and Evolution, the concept of an orderly world as deduced from the rational and consistent God of the Bible provided a basis for the belief in the cause and effect concept of science. The pagan gods of other cultures were capricious, and this does not fit with the consistency of science. How many of you are thankful for the Bible? How many of you are thankful for the spirit of prophecy? Jesus pointed at the last part of the text to this is the acceptable year of the Lord, but then at the first part of this text he said what? The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. And he says, today this is fulfilled in your hearing. That was the spirit of prophecy coupled with the Bible. And by the way, in Jesus' ministry, the Bible and the spirit of prophecy were the foundation. And in this church, the Bible and the spirit of the prophecy are the foundation of effective health ministry. So when we get to this point where they ask the question, then we just say, hey, look, let me just share with you all about it. I want to give you a study that I give them. I wanted to say that, you know, Matthew had an apocalypse. It was Matthew 24. Mark had an apocalypse. It's Mark 13. Luke has an apocalypse. It's Luke 21. But where's John's apocalypse? It's the book of Revelation. Our church has been raised up to show people the prophetic and spirit of prophecy aspects of the Bible. And when you're leading people from health to Him, you have to lead them directly to the precise God of science. The solemn messages that have been given in their order in Revelation are to occupy first place in the minds of God's people. There is a need of much closer study of the Word of God, especially should Daniel and Revelation have attention. This is not in your notes. This is the part I added. So just write it down. As never before in the history of our work, Revelation in connection with the book of Daniel especially demands study. So guess what I do? I take people in these studies right from the scientific things that have happened in your program right to the book of Daniel. I want to show you how to do that by going through the first study with you. But you got to see the big picture. We develop an interest in our health studies. We then lead them along, all the way along. This is how I lead people to baptism over the last 13 years. The interest would come in the health program. Then we'd have the intro study, which I'm going to show you. That would lead to a study from a health concept of Daniel 1 to 6. Then I would give them a chance to escape. But they would all say, I want to keep studying. How can we keep these studies going? And then we go through the prophetic sessions. And then we go right to the heart of the book of Revelation. And then Revelation chapter 1 is a review of Adventist doctrine. If you ever wondered where all the Adventist doctrines are, they're in Revelation chapter 1. You've got the Bible, verse 1 to 3. You've got salvation, the next couple of verses, who washed us in His blood. You've got the second coming, every eye will see Him. You've got the Sabbath, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. You've got the sanctuary, I was among the seven lampstands. You've got the state of the dead, I am the one that has the keys of death and of hell. You've got the spirit of prophecy, the one who is and was and is to come. And you have the doctrine of the church. All right there in Revelation chapter 1. That is the catechism of the Adventist church. So this is where we take people. And what I say to my people is, I say, look, give me five. What must I do to be saved physically? They ask that question. Five questions. What's the connection between this health seminar and your church? And I give them the study I'm about to give you. Then I lead them through Daniel 1-6. How can I keep these studies going? What's the rest of the book of Daniel about? These are the questions what people would ask as we studied with them. What's the rest of Daniel about? What's Revelation about? Because we had slightly interested in Revelation. Then we go through Revelation 10-22. Why didn't we do 1-9? Because it's a rehash of the sevens. And I want to do that again right then. I just do it afterwards. Go right through Revelation 10-22. And then they say, how can I join the church? Revelation chapter 1, let's review. What hinders me from joining the church? Can you see the big picture? So, that's what I want to have happen. I want that process, and that's a process. It might take a year, it might take 2 years, it might take less time, depends on the situation. So, you know, that's really the process. Now, let's go back in our last moments of time, the last half hour here, to look then at the first study. How many want to look at the first study? Because it's key. This is how you would take people from health to Him. So, they've come to your seminar and they've had all of these... They've had all of these S's fulfilled, scientific excellence and all the ones, I won't say them all again now. And now they're asking the question, what's the connection? So the first study is on sources of authority, and I call it credible sources. So let me just give you a flavor. I call this one, let's say, the first CHIP program. You could put whatever your program is in there. The first depression recovery program. The first 8 weeks to wellness program. Whatever your program is. So as I start out, I just share with them, I say, look, people at Harvard, at Yale, and other thought centers of America are beginning to say, what is the connection between spirituality and health? Now, I didn't give you notes on this because they're available in this series of studies. So I didn't make notes, but you might want to take some notes. What's the connection between spirituality and health? Prominent magazines like Time Magazine talks about faith and healing, and Dean Ornish, the father of some of preventive medicine and cardiology, he even adds a spiritual component called meditation, which is, you know, probably the lowest common denominator, where everybody just kind of goes, I mean, anybody can almost ascribe to that. And then prayer also is studied in these journals. Many people think about it. But some people get concerned. They say, wait a minute, I don't want to be ambushed by spirituality. In other words, is this some kind of cult? When people start talking about what you should eat and have classes on it, people say, that's a cult. But the science is pretty compelling. Studies indicate that ignoring the spiritual aspect of our lives can be hazardous to our health. Well, just to look at some of those studies in a popularized manner, let me just go through how Reader's Digest summarized them not long ago. Church members have lower death rates than non-members regardless of risk factors. Those with religious commitment had fewer symptoms and had better health outcomes in cancer, blood pressure, heart disease, and general health studies. People with strong religious commitment seem to be less prone to depression, suicide, alcoholism, and other addictions. And by the way, all these studies, you can get all these studies. Doctors, 80% of Americans believe that faith and prayer can help people recover from illness. Doctors are beginning to pray with their patients. 60% of doctors think they should talk about faith and prayer. This is a new day. This isn't the 60s anymore. And 63% of doctors say that God intervened in their own medical conditions. So people are moving beyond the facts to faith. They don't want just science. They want the spiritual. They don't want just logic. They want love. They don't just want research. They want a relationship. And that's what they've been getting in your program. They've been getting facts and faith. Not just amazing facts, but amazing friends. Right? Not just amazing science, but spirituality as well. It's all come together. It's kind of smashed together. They don't know what it is. It's like, whoa, that tastes good, but where do I get more of that? So then I just come right out with it. I say, look, Seventh-day Adventists see the Bible as the final source of authority in their church. When the church began, the early pioneers were dropping like flies. They were dying in their 30s and their 40s. And so James and Ellen White, two early pioneers, as well as another, Joseph Bates, if I be more specific, they said, look, what is going on? We got to do something about this. And they began to look around in the... So I just share this with them, either in a little seminar setting, one-on-one. They began to look around and see what was happening. They visited the health institutions of the day, and then finally they decided to start one of their own health institutions, the Western Reform Health Institute, which you know about down here in Battle Creek. The first doctor was not really someone that captured people's attention, but the second or maybe third was John Harvey Kellogg, who, when he came, so terrorized or terrified the patients because he was so young and so radical that they all left. There were 12 patients, and there were only three after he was there just for a day. They said, we're out of here. This guy's going to kill us. Beware of young doctors and old barbers. So they hit the road. But he began to get a little more bedside manner. He did 80,000 bowel surgeries in his day, and as he was doing his bowel surgeries, not all in one day, but in his lifetime, as he was doing those surgeries, he would see all the problems inside the bowel and everything else. And so he says, how are we going to clean that out? So he started to design some brooms. And those brooms were, of course, the food that went through. And he began to design that. And, of course, he took as his mentor, Ellen White. He said, if she says it, I'm going to try it. And you know the rest of the story. By the way, when I tell people this, they are amazed. They look up in their cereal boxes and they see Kellogg's and all that. And then I tell them about how in Battle Creek there used to be a museum that would tell this whole story. It just recently shut down, I understand. And I was amazed when I went to that the first time. You go to the top of the stairs, and as you look at how it tells the story there in Serial City, the very first picture that it shows at the end of that first video was Ellen White. You got John Harvey Kellogg arguing with Will Keith Kellogg over who made cornflakes, and then Ellen White comes up and says, I gave it by revelation. And she flutters off the screen. Kind of a mischaracterization, but also an acknowledgement that there was a higher inspiration. Isn't that interesting? So then I talk about Ellen White. Why not? I just get it out. You know what? We have nothing to be ashamed of in talking about Ellen White, especially when it comes to hell. Ronald Numbers got his numbers wrong, okay? T. Colin Campbell, head professor of nutritional biochemistry, Cornell University, in charge of the largest epidemiological study ever done. I interviewed him recently, a couple years ago, as he came to talk to one of my health programs. And he wrote a book that you can buy now. How many of you have read this book, The China Study? The first four chapters of this book are really recommended reading for every Adventist minister, because they so document everything that Ellen White says. I got so excited when I read the first four chapters. You know what I did? I took another book I had in my library and did an appendectomy on it. How many of you know what an appendectomy is? That's when you get your appendix out. So I took the appendix out of that book and I sent it to him on the internet. It was Neil Nedley's book, and in the appendix he has this section that has all of Ellen White's statements, and then it has the science that backs up those statements. That's why he calls his book Proof Positive. So I took the appendix out, withering, and I sent it via email to him. I said, what do you think of this? I didn't give credit to Dr. Nedley. I just said, what do you think about these things? I didn't yet. He got it. He wrote me back a 16-page email. How many of you like to get 16-page emails? He read the entire thing, wrote back with comments. I was so impressed with his comments, I said, can I interview you? Interviewed him in my church, filmed it. Here's the interview. Here's this excerpt, February 24, 2005. I'm asking him questions. This is what he says. I am not aware of anyone who's more on point than Ellen White. Given her background, she's truly an amazing woman. I am convinced that almost 100% of her statements are now substantially supported by the scientific evidence that's been developed during the past 2 to 3 decades. My friends, that's a powerful statement from one of the largest voices in nutritional biochemistry today. By the way, he was the direct descendant of the students of Clive McKay. In fact, Clive McKay, some of you might remember from Ministry Magazine in the 50s, wrote a series of articles, and he was the head of Cornell University back then as well. This guy was his graduate student. There was a faithful person who was in the class that gave a book, Counsels on Diets and Foods, to Clive McKay and to this person. By the way, in my files at home, I got in touch with that lady who witnessed to Clive McKay. Clive McKay sent her letters that said, if I had life to start over again, knowing what I do about Ellen White and about Adventists, I would have been a Seventh-day Adventist. I'm looking for the opportune time to share this with Dr. Campbell. Notice what he goes on to say. What I've come to realize, he's talking about Ellen White, and even deeply worry about, is why is it that this message of Ellen White and others has been so mislaid on shelves out of sight? Sounds like a message to Laodicea to me. It is abundantly clear to me that now is the time to bring this forward in whatever way each of us are able to do it. They are interviewing Dr. Campbell, and he may be doing a movie soon for Hollywood telling his story of nutritional combat. He was on the Nutrition Council. He's been bad-mouthed by scientists all over the place because they don't want to hear bad news about their bad habits. They just want to hear good news about their bad habits. But notice what he's saying about Ellen White. How many of you think that's amazing? How many of you are thankful for Ellen White? How many of you are thankful for the Bible? We've seen today that the Bible is the foundation of the health message and that the spirit of prophecy is. How many can see it again? Paul Harvey, you've heard this one. You don't know Ellen White? Get to know her. She knows about health. And so, in my study, I just show them those things. Now, I don't go into it like I did with you because I don't want to lose the Bible study, but I try and contain myself. I say, well, this is what some people are saying. And then I get right off that subject. I say, what would Ellen White say? This is what she would say. She'd say, study His Word. Well, what does His Word say? Then we do a little Bible study. Genesis chapter 1, verse 29. What's it say? Let's read it together. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for... Ooh, is that good advice? Yes. The Creator's diet is high in carbohydrate. They studied fruits, nuts, grains, and vegetables. Dr. Tim Arnott, I interviewed him on 3ABN. Notice the original diet has 1% saturated fat, 7% fat, 78% carbohydrate, 15% protein. Sounds exactly like the scientific studies today that show you how to have optimal health. Well, let's add some nuts, since there are some nuts here today. It just increases saturated fat just a little bit, 4%. Fat goes up to 25%. Carbohydrate, 60%. Protein, 14%. Look, that diet, the original diet, is the optimal diet to reverse depression, heart disease, and a host of other diseases. And that's why not just the Bible is saying it, but it's almost as if Genesis 1:29 is leaping onto the pages of Newsweek and of the Cancer Society. But there was a problem that developed. Now, you know, when I'm giving the study, we're just kind of exploring together. We look up the text and we think about it. These are the studies I gave to George and the others. Genesis 3, 1 to 6. You remember the story. Let's read it together. Hath not God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? You shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day you eat thereof, your eyes shall be opened and you shall be as... This guy, it sounds like a food commercial. He's the first drug pusher, right? Anyway, so... Basically, then it goes bad. The whole world goes bad. I fast forward. I could go through Genesis 9 and all those different things. I only do that if they ask the questions. But I fast forward to Deuteronomy 7:15. God had a people. He tried to clean out the world. It, you know, none of those things work. Finally, He has the people. He calls them out of Egypt, and He's calling them out of Egypt. What's it say in Deuteronomy 7, verse 15? Let's read it together. The Lord will take away from thee all sickness and put none of the evil diseases of Egypt, what thou knowest, upon thee. So what did they have? They had diseases of Egypt. What were these diseases? Well, let's see if we can figure it out together. What's this guy's problem? He's dead. Very dead. Some people, I asked him that question, they said, well, look, he doesn't have a hat on. That's true. A book by Carol Reeves. Yeah, okay. I should just read it. Carol Reeves went through and looked at all the mummies and a few of the daddies as well, and saw what the problems were, what they were dying from. These are pictures from the book. What's the problem with this guy? Someone told me he doesn't have enough strength on his guitar and it has led him to overeat. That's what someone told me. Someone told me that he has a cardiac crease in his ear there. But I think the problem's obvious. How many of you can see the problem? Is this a problem today in America? I want to show you some slides over the last 20 years in America. Is this a problem in America? Look, the sections where it's blue is no data. Then it shows where it's light blue, less than 10% obesity. Then where it's a little bit darker blue, 10 to 14% obesity. And then it gets worse and worse and worse. Notice what happens. This is 1985. This is 1986. This is 1987, 1988, 99, 90, 91. Now we're moving up into new categories, 95, 96, 97. Now we're greater than 20% obesity in some states. Now notice that spreads across 99, 2000. Now notice what starts to happen, greater than 25%. And notice what's happening to our nation. And that's happened over what? Since 1985 to 2005. Why is that? Why is that? It's the cheese industry, if you want to know the truth. The cheese industry, when they figured out that cheese has caseomorphins in it, queso is cheese, morphine is morphine. That's when they added extra cheese. And everybody goes, why is it that I'm so addicted to cheese? That's because it has a morphine derivative in it. And by the way, this hits Adventists between the eyes as well. Sometimes. Right? We maybe should be like the people from Wisconsin, cheeseheads, wearing those little wedges around, right? Maybe not. But the real troubling thing about this, by the way, how many of you can see that the disease of Egypt are affecting us as well? But notice the sad thing. One in four persons seeing a primary care physician about weight problems has an active psychiatric illness, usually what? I had one lady come to the CHIP program. She came to the program. She was very overweight. You know, we sometimes have the wrong attitudes concerning people that are overweight. We try and judge them. We say this and do that. We should never do that. We should be happy they're coming to church. We should minister to anybody, whatever size, medium, small, large, or in between. Yes? After the CHIP program got on for a while, she became good friends with me. She began to open up. You know what she told me? She said, I was abused as a little girl. I was passed from relative to relative. You know what? The reason I started to eat, I wanted to be so ugly that no man would ever touch me again. You know how many times I've heard that story? More than just once. When people come with physical problems, we have no business just saying, oh, you're a bad person. We have every right, however, to pray and say, what can I do to be of help? There might be something that needs some special attention. What's the problem here? I'll just help you. These arrows are pointing to, by the way, someone said, no skin, that's not it. It's gallstones. What are gallstones caused from? High fat diet. And that's another thing the Egyptians had. What's this problem besides no skin and eyeballs? Someone said TMJ, temporal mandibular joint disorder. Yeah, and, you know, I looked back in the book and that was true. The guy does have TMJ, but that's not really the issue. What's the issue here? Cavities, because they had date palm. They had their all kinds of soda pops, if you will, of their day. And their teeth were literally rotting out. What's the problem here? These are the phalanges hanging down, the femurs right here, the two large bones. So you have the hands hanging down, but you see this large blow-up here. And the blow-up there is of a coronary, or of an artery, not the coronary, but an artery. And guess what it said? Carol called that atherosclerosis. She said that in mummy after mummy, because these were the affluent people that could be mummified, they saw prevalent atherosclerosis, heart disease, diabetes most likely from the overweight and the soft drinks. What else? Hypertension, everything else. The Egyptians were dying of the same things we're dying. Now, what does this do to your Bible study contact? They go, wait a minute, the Bible is talking about the same thing the CHIP program was talking about. One group had to study the toilets of Egypt. How many of you like to get your PhD in studying toilets? But they studied the affluent sections versus the sections where the Hyksos lived. Hyksos were the Hebrews. And they found that the sections where the Hebrews lived had largely plant pectins and plant sources, but where the affluent lived, they had all these different tracheini larvae and all kinds of other things. Isn't that interesting? You learn a lot from looking back at Egypt. So how did God remove these depressing diseases? How did he do it? He ran the first chip program. Right? So this is where it gets exciting. They've gone through all the science. Now in your mind, it's kind of a fun study, but they're starting to be introduced to things, and they're seeing these sources of authority that now we're addressing the same things, and you don't make a big deal like I am right now, but you're just kind of like, he ran the first chip program. And they go, really? Yeah, 2000. Well, let's look at that program together. He called it the Exodus program. X means out. Odas, the metered, measured way out. He didn't jerk people out. He led them out step by step. The Exodus program. Well, why did it begin? Exodus 2:23. The children of Israel groaned because of the bondage, and they what? So they asked for the program. Their cry came up to God. God said, I'll help you. He sent two chip leaders. By the way, Moses was a great chip leader. He was always going up the mountain and down the mountain. He was physically, he had a stair master because he knew the master. He was back and forth, back and forth. Isn't that right? And he was always leading people. Were there any promises made? You know, we make promises when people come to the chip program. We say, look, 15 to 20% of you will have your cholesterol lowered. This is what's going to happen to your diabetes, this and that. Did God make any promises? Yes, Exodus 15, 22. If you read it with me, diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God. I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who does what? By the way, that text is totally linked with the sanctuary later in that chapter, and it's totally linked with the right hand in the first part of the chapter. Christ's right-hand ministry was telegraphed. Why does Ellen White call it the right-hand ministry? Because it's the right hand that led them out of Egypt. And it's tied directly to the sanctuary. Make no mistake, we would have no health message without the doctrine of the sanctuary. Did you catch that? There would be none of what I've shown you unless we had a sanctuary message. How many of you are thankful for the sanctuary doctrine? I detest it when churches say, well, that's part of our history, but we now have moved beyond that. I'm glad for the health message, and I'm glad for the doctrine that gave birth to it. Okay, so let's go on. I don't say that in my study, by the way. So, how did God run the program? First of all, he took a history and physical and confronted the errors through education. Right? Diagnosis. Dia means through, gnosis means to know. 85% of every problem is usually discovered through a proper health history. If you don't take a history, you don't know what's going on. And so that's what he did. And he discovered that they had some cognitive distortions. This is what you discover in evangelistic meetings as well. All these people have misbeliefs about the Sabbath, about the state of the dead, about all the essence. And you're going to take those distortions and clean them up, right? But this is what happens in the CHIP program physically. People think, I should do this, I should do that. And they've been informed that the four food groups were really good when they were really bad. They're the four apocalyptic dietary horsemen. And you have to replace them with 7 to 10 of the right foods. Right? And so you have to get those distortions out of the way. And the people coming from Egypt, they had cognitive, that is, thought distortions. What were they? Well, first of all, they worshiped the river. Right? The Egyptians believed that the Nile was the bloodstream of their God. And that there was healing in his body fluids, or her body fluids. So they would go down and say, look, we're going to be healed by the blood of God. But what did God say? You need to be healed by the blood of the Lamb. They worshiped the frogs. They had a story about the frog that jumped over the moon, not the cow. Literally, they had a story about the frog that jumped over the moon. The frog was the goddess of fertility. She was believed to be the wife of the creator of the world. And it was a capital offense for Egyptians to kill frogs because they were sacred. And God said, no, if that's what you think God is like, we'll send God everywhere because God's supposed to be omnipresent. He's supposed to be in your kneading bowl, in your bedroom, in your microwave, in your fax machine, and next to your phone. He's supposed to be everywhere. So when God showed up everywhere, they said, kill God, get him out of here. You see, they worshiped the frogs. I once preached a sermon on this called The Day God Jumped Into Bed. A little lady came up there and said, you should not have titles like that. But it's true. The frogs even jumped into bed. The frogs were looking at every aspect of life, just like God should. Right? By the way, frogs come out on a rainy day. I think it's about time to rain, don't you think? So they worship the frogs. God changed that. They worship bugs. They love bugs. You look at their sarcophagi, and you look through them, and you see all these beetles and everything put in strategic locations. You're going, man, what's wrong with them? They've gone buggy. And they did. They worship bugs. But you know what? No Egyptian priest could officiate if he was defiled with live bugs or lice, because they were supposedly coming from the earth. And when the bugs came out, God said, all right, I'm in charge of the bugs. And the bugs came out everywhere, and they even went in the ears and the eyes and everywhere else. Remember the story? And what did they say? This is the what? This is the finger of God. What were they acknowledging? All of their gods were false, but that God was true. He was clearing up cognitive distortions in their minds. They worshiped the sun. This plague struck directly at Pharaoh when he turned the lights out, because Pharaoh said, I'm in charge of the sun. God said, you're not in charge of anything. It was so dark you could feel it. That was a real big time cleanup. And what happened during the CHIP program or during your health program? You're cleaning up distortions. And that's what I asked them. I said, did we expose any errors during our seminar? And just listen. They said, oh yeah, I used to think that, but now I think this. Oh yeah, I used to think that, but now I think this. Oh yeah, I used to think that. And all these distortions are clear. They said, what's happening to your life as a result? Oh, I'm feeling so much better. Because if the thoughts are right, then the feelings should be right. And the thoughts and feelings make up the character and characterize what we do and the habits. And I feel so much better because my distorted thoughts are gone. Do you see how God did that back then? And they go, ooh, yes. Next, God ordered a blood test. You remember the blood test? They were supposed to put blood on their doorposts. And when we started our program, I said, we had a blood test too. Remember how I drew your blood? And once you saw that, you didn't pass the test, but you said, I want to pass the test. I want my blood to be testable and be in the right place, the right time, and the right manner. Next, they were to leave Egypt. How were they supposed to leave Egypt? Could God have raptured them? Could there have been a secret rapture that was not so secret? Could they have? He could have done any of those things. He could have sent helicopters. He could have done all those things. But what did he do? They walked. What did we do in the CHIP program? What did we do in our health program? We put a map up on the wall and we walked. Just like God, we ran our program the same way. What did God do to remind them of His power? He had them sing. Did we sing in our program? Sometimes I sing in my programs, like especially depression programs. You know the song Dr. Nelly teaches? I don't like it, I don't like it, it's okay. How many of you have heard that song? I don't like it, I don't like it, it's okay, it's okay. I can stand it anyway, I can stand it anyway. I'm all right, I'm all right. Want to sing it with me? I don't like it, I don't like it, it's okay, it's okay. I can stand it anyway, I can stand it anyway. I'm all right, I'm all right. See, he's in that depression program, he's trying to clear up this cognitive distortion that our feelings lead, right? When they came out, they say, I will sing unto the Lord, for He has triumphed gloriously, the horse and rider thrown into the sea. They sang together. They sang together. What kind of fluids did God provide for them to drink? What had they been drinking? The date palms and everything, and He provided Mountain Dew. Water from the rock, right? Came right out of the mountain. What kind of food did they want to eat? They were quibbling and calling for quail. That's the only picture I could get of these little baby quail. They were probably larger ones than that. And what kind of food did God provide? He gave them the quail. You can have what you want, but those who ate that, what did they do? They quivered from the quail and died. But what did He give to the rest? Complex carbohydrates. It was called what? Manna. And what does manna mean? What is it? And I ask him, did you ever say that during the CHIP program? And they do. They look at all the stuff on your table. He goes, what's that stuff? What's that? What's that? What's that? What's that over there? What is that? He says, you guys had manna the whole time. They go, yes, I guess we did. You see how fun this is? But how many of you can see the connection? Don't mess up the fact that it gets the attention, but it's making the connection. Now what is the source of authority? The Bible and a brief introduction to the spirit of prophecy. I could go through some of these others, but I won't. But let me just show you this one. I think it's interesting. Coriander, which Leslie Harding, I know some books in the back, he thinks that manna was made out of coriander. Notice what it's helpful for according to at least one study, the relief of anxiety and insomnia. Isn't that interesting? Especially if you're doing a depression seminar. And also, almonds can contain the neurotransmitter or the precursors for dopamine, which is also helpful in reversing depression. Isn't that interesting? God not only prescribed what they should eat and drink, He also said when. When were they supposed to eat? When were they supposed to drink? Hello? When were they supposed to eat? When were they supposed to go get the food? And when did it melt? By what time? When the sun came up, what happened? It melted. Now, they could have cooked it and kept it in other ways, and they most likely did. But the whole point was, if you wanted to get a good diet, you had to go out in the morning, and as you knelt down to get your breakfast, it reminded you, and then maybe you had a big lunch and maybe a little bit lighter supper. And so God had this timing down. And He also gave them light therapy, reset all their circadian clocks, which I told you, every cell in the body now, they're finding even skin cells, they know when to flake. Your abdominal tissue knows when to replace itself every 72 hours. Your red blood cells replace themselves every 120 days. And all these clocks are reset by light therapy. And of course, this is interesting as well. All those foods that they ate, those complex carbohydrates and whatnot, are high sources of tryptophan, which is changed into hydroxytryptophan by sunlight and B vitamins if you're out there for at least 20 minutes. And that turns into serotonin, which makes you feel good. That's what makes you happy. And then at night, what happens? At night, during complete dark, that pineal gland makes melatonin. So you have to have complete darkness and complete light. By the way, if you eat anything late at night, it secretes insulin and cuts your melatonin production way down. That's why you don't feel good if you eat late at night. By the way, that's why Ellen White said to do those very things. I don't show them that at this particular point. What was given to stop, reverse, or better yet, prevent cognitive distortions from occurring? He took 10 things away, but then what did He give them to replace it? 10 commandments. He took away the 10 distortions and gave them the 10 what? 10 commandments. Isn't that great? That's what He did. So Egypt's 10 distortions were replaced with God's 10 truths. What teaching tool did God use to summarize His plan and purpose for His people? The sanctuary. My friends, if God can cleanse the heavenly sanctuary like He's doing right now, how many think He can clean up your arteries? And that's what the Adventist Church can bring. Well, I want to show you something neat. All these people ask questions, why did Jesus eat fish? Have you ever had that question? Why did He eat fish then? That sounds fishy to me. I've had that question so many times. And I began to recognize that it was because Christ was fulfilling different things at different times in the sanctuary. He was in His earthly ministry during that time. Notice this. If you look at the sanctuary, what could never go into the sanctuary? Unclean food. Yes or no? No, Mr. or Mrs. Piggy. It was always outside the camp. You couldn't even touch it. It'd be best not to even look at it. When you came inside the sanctuary, what kind of animals could be used only to represent Christ? Clean animals. And those are the only ones that ever could be what? Eaten under certain situations. But did those clean animals ever go into the holy place? Only the blood, right? Sometimes a small portion of what they would eat there as a token, right? But then what you see happening as once they get into the holy place, what happens? Is something new introduced? What? Grains and grapes. Right there you have bread, you have complex carbohydrates, and you have the fruits introduced again. And then what happens when you get into the most holy place? You have Aaron's rod that budded, and you have almonds. It's like pointing people back to what diet? It starts out unclean and goes all the way to the best diet. It points back to what text in the Bible? Genesis 1:29. And by the way, you get the revelation. It's that picture again. God wants to take us back to Eden. Does God love people out here that are writing and eating Mr. and Mrs. Piggy? Does He love people here? Does He love people here? Yes, but He's moving them forward. How many of you think you're going to eat meat in heaven? You know, the astronauts, the Senate committee a few years ago did a study on how they could take cows to space stations. They spent millions of taxpayer dollars on how to design space suits for cows. You know why they did this? Because some of the astronauts wanted to eat steak when they got up there that tasted better than the freeze-dried. But they gave up because they said it was too difficult. Anyway, I don't say that in my study, but how many can see what's happened here in the study? God has cleared up their cognitive distortions. By the way, I'll just show you this picture. This is a picture of cognitive behavioral therapy. That's what evangelism is. That's what health evangelism is. It changes the thoughts so that the thoughts are right, the feelings will be right, the actions will be right. Notice what happens in cognitive behavioral therapy versus paroxetine, which is an antidepressant. Both people feel good. These people feel good because what area of the brain is lighting up? The area of the brain that's lighting up is the midbrain, the back, these sections back here. But up here, what part of the brain is lighting up? The frontal lobe. So they've been changed from the thoughts down. That's what happens in health evangelism done right. That's what happens in evangelism done right. Remember I told you a little bit, I said I'd tell you just a tiny bit more about George. Remember George? George kept studying. He kept coming off and on to church. I kept going and studying at his house. And I can remember the day I just was leaving that district in Wichita, Kansas, where I'd been for 13 years, almost 14, and I was preaching a series of farewell sermons. I said, look, most pastors would have left a long time ago, not because of you folks, but most pastors just kind of moveon.com, you know? And I've been here for 14 years. So I'm going to preach, enough sermons, farewell sermons, that can make up for all the times that I didn't get a chance because I haven't had much practice. So I'm going to have a series called Faring Well. So I did a series of Faring Well sermons. And in every sermon, you know, how many of you have ever felt like when you're preaching those, when you're with someone that you know is going to die, or when you are in a situation where you know you may never see that person again, or when you're leaving the district, you want to give it all because you realize that that's your last chance. By the way, I think that's probably how we should always live. Yes or no? And so I was preaching my heart out. I was just pleading with people that had not made decisions, just in my sermons, not directly. And as I was preaching one day, I saw George, the engineer, begin to weep during the sermon. And I realized he was under conviction. So I immediately went to an appeal. And I looked the other way. And I had an appeal. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something that was at least one phrase specifically for him. And I called people to come forward, and guess who came forward? That atheist agnostic George came forward for the appeal. I didn't even want to look at him. I was so nervous. And there he was crying. And I said, praise God. Now, when people come forward to an appeal, does that mean that they were responding to what you said? Maybe, but maybe not. What I found is that the more intellectual the person, the more important it is for you to do exactly what I'm about to say. I go to them and say, what did that mean to you and why? So I went to George's house. I took my Bible worker with me. He now works with me at Amazing Facts in the AFCO. Took him with me. We went to his house. We went in and I said, George, I want to talk to you. What did that appeal mean to you? He said, well, come on in, boys. Have a seat. Sat down in the living room. And then he got up and turned off all the lights and sat down in his chair. So my Bible works reaches over and he turns on the light next to George. And I went. As he turned the light off. Why was he turning all the lights off? He's going to cry again. Turned the lights off. And there, in the darkness and the stillness, he began to sob and he said, I can't believe I'm saying this. And I can't believe that God has changed me. But he has totally changed my life physically. And he's totally changed my life spiritually. And I want to be a part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And I want to ask you if you baptize my wife and I. And you know, the tears of George were not the only tears that day. I started to cry because there's nothing like seeing someone's life change. And to see George die to self over those months with the little decisions and then want to formalize it with that big decision was the reason I'm alive and the reason I have hope and you have hope and everyone has hope. And that's the only reason we should be involved in health evangelism. Medical missionaries who labor in evangelistic lines are doing a work as high of order as their ministerial fellow workers. In the higher walks of life will be found many who respond to the truth because it's consistent, because it bears the stamp of the high character of the gospel. Not a few of men of ability will thus be won to the cause. They'll work energetically, and they'll enter into the Lord's work. And that's what George does. He's a key member now. So look, we've gone through it. Scientific excellence, sacrificial service, sufficient time, significant interaction, spiritual path is established. And then I gave you the first study of a series of six studies which go through the sequence of Scripture. This is kind of how I lead people. I can't go through the rest of them. I just give you a flavor. Science, that's your health program. God's Word documented is what I call it. Sir Isaac Newton said, we think God's thoughts after Him. And so science just proves that God is true. And Adventists, with the 300 studies, peer-reviewed, are walking documentation of the truth of the Bible and its prophetic word and the spirit of prophecy. And then after that is done, if you do that successfully with all those S's, they'll ask, what's the connection between this and your church? And then you say, let me show you the real sources. I introduce them to the Bible and the spirit of prophecy. That's what we just went through. And then guess what I do? I take them to the oldest scientific study ever done according to the New England Journal of Medicine. And that oldest study that was ever done according to the February 23 edition of New England Journal of Medicine was Daniel chapter 1. And I say, look, here's what the New England Journal of Medicine says is the oldest study. Should we look at it? I take them through that and I show them how in Daniel chapter 1 the issue is how to give your heart to God spiritually, not just physically. And how do you do that? You step out in grace and God gives you faith. And you step out in more faith and He gives you grace. And so the paradigm in chapter 1 of Daniel is you step out in faith and God gives you grace. It's Ephesians chapter 2 verse 8. And then at the end of that, I invite them to give their heart to Jesus spiritually. You stepped out in faith during the CHIP program. You stepped out in faith and God gave you grace all these ways. What about doing it spiritually? And that's when they give their heart to Jesus. Chapter 2 of Daniel, what's it about? Chapter 2, what's the big key issue? It's not the statue. We always talk about the statue. The big issue in chapter 2 is connection with God. There was a group that was connected and there was a group that was not. There was a group that was praying on the king. There was a group that was praying for the king. The issue in chapter 2 is connection with God, specifically prayer. So in chapter 2, I teach them how to pray. And I invite them to a life of prayer. And then I say, if you're connected with Him personally, I want to show you that He's connected cosmically. I want to study that prophecy with you in chapter 2 at some point. Can you see what's happening here? I'll just fast forward to Daniel chapter 6 and get to Daniel chapter 6. What's Daniel chapter 6? What's it about? God's law versus man's law, isn't it? And you know what I call it? Handling the holidays. The biggest problem with health people is they don't know what to do when the holidays come. And Daniel had 30 holidays in a row that were very harmful to his health. If he didn't keep the holidays, he was going to die. And many people on your health programs, it's the holidays that get them. I say, how do you handle the holidays? And we study how Daniel handled the holidays. But basically, we have three S's. He had settled it with God. He was satisfied with God. And so he was sealed by God. And I tell him a story about my mom, who's here today. She stepped out when I was a little boy. And I remember living here in Michigan growing up, and my mom would can with these jars, these Kerr jars. How many of you have ever done some canning? And you take those cans and you put those all there in the pot. And what do you do with them? You screw the lids on, and then what do you do? You boil them, you heat them up, you put them through the testing tubes. And you boil them, you get all wet. And my mommy would say to me, she'd say, Donnie, we're doing that to boil out all the bad. Keep all the good in. And she'd take those, I don't know how many times she said this, she'd take the jars out, and then she'd put them on the counter. You know those little wire things you put them on? And then she'd, don't touch them, they're still hot. But then she'd, what I want you to do is I want you to listen. What was I supposed to listen for? Pop! And she says, you tell me which one popped. And then we move it over. And she says, what's happened? What happens when it pops? She goes, that means it's sealed. And Donnie, God wants you to pop. He wants you to be sealed. He wants all the good to stay inside and all the bad to be out. And then I asked the people in that study, do you want to be sealed? Do you want to say you settled it with God, that you're satisfied with Him, that you want to be sealed? Do you want to live by His law, not man's law, concerning health and anything else? And guess what? I've never had a health contact yet that hasn't said, yes, I want to be sealed. And then I want to say, then I say to him, well, and they usually say to me, well, let's study more. And I say, let's find out how to be sealed, spiritually speaking. Can you see the power of the book of Daniel? That's what we do. So, scientific excellence, sacrificial service, sufficient time, spiritual path established, source of authority, documented and introduced, the sequence of Scripture, which I just showed you, but then the seriousness of the topic. Let me just show you this last slide as we close. You see, these are tombstones, but they also have pictures of various health programs. They have stop smoking programs and CHIP programs and depression recovery. Look, folks, people that come to your health programs die. They die. They die. Everybody goes through the CHIP program is going to die. Everybody goes through your health program is going to die. Unless they see Jesus come. They're all going to die. They're going to die the first death. But if you do your job right, they won't die the second death. Never do a health program without the intention of leading people from health to Him. It's not just about death. It's about the second death. It's not just about life. It's about everlasting life. Thank you very much for your attention. I hope that this has given you kind of a picture of something that maybe can help you with your health ministry. If you're interested in the book or the those things, Sherry Christie has them back there at the table. Thank you very much. Lord bless.
Thank you. Let's stand for a word of prayer, and we'll see you at what time tomorrow morning? 9 o'clock. 8:59 and a half. If you plan 9, you'll be here at 9:01. But if you plan at 8:59 and a half, you'll be here. Father in heaven, be with us. Guide and direct us this evening. And we would also like to pray for Doug as he shares this evening. That Father, as he each night shares these distinctive truths, may he share even more from his heart and challenge us more than he has the night before. For we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2007, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.